is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to the first episode of the Hardwood Prospectus. I'm Wes Goldberg. I will be hosting along with Ross Gottschalk, fellow NBA enthusiast and lover of all players developing.
Wes, I'm working on my mindfulness training right now. But like J.R. Smith and the rest of the Knicks, I'm trying to be as mindful as possible to get ready for this season. So I'm staying in the moment. This exact second of the podcast is the only thing I'm focused on.
It's pretty intense. I don't know if I'm that prepared. But
how do you think that's going, especially with JR? Do you think he's doing any of the Zen stuff from Phil? You think that's working? Do you think he's reading any of Phil's books or anything like that?
JR?
Yeah.
No. I think there's absolutely zero chance he's reading a book. And I absolutely guarantee you that Phil Jackson, somebody will ask him about it, and Phil will lie through his teeth and say, you know what, I've been surprised with how well JR has taken to the books. And that's what he will say, but that doesn't mean he's read or even opened the book. He just said, I'm surprised well he's taken to them, meaning he probably just took them home.
Well, the New York media already kind of beat you to it. They asked him, I think a couple days ago, who's kind of like the kind of people who have taken to like all your book suggestions and stuff that you wouldn't think. And he said Andrew Bynum was one of them.
I saw that.
Yeah. So that's kind of the, you know, kind of the same thought.
He's a free agent.
Yeah, right? So I just love how all the New York, the Knicks beat writers are covering the mindfulness training. Like, this is like a real thing. And they're just referring to it as the mindfulness training, and every day we're getting tweets and stories about how mindful they're being.
Who do you think ends up being the most, who, since this is a podcast about development, and we don't really talk about the star players like everybody else is going to, so we're going to talk about, the developing players, because that's what we're really, really interested in. We love finding, role players that, do interesting things, maybe, one or two things really, really well that we just, like to watch them do. So if we're still on the talking about developing players, who takes the biggest leap in mindfulness on the Knicks this season?
On the Knicks. Bargnani. I don't even... Oh, man, I don't even know. I think... I'm going to say...
That might not be a bad idea. I kind of like that, because he might be in this... Bargnani might be good, though, because he might be in this state whereas, he got traded for a lot. He thinks he's kind of a big deal. Because, if you got traded for a lot, if I traded you from my made-up team for, Kobe Bryant, you might think, you're a really big deal, right? Even though you might suck. So he might think he's a big deal, and then he sucks last year. So he might be in the state where he kind of needs this mindful training. His self-esteem might be kind of low right now. He could take a leap.
He plays like he's out of his mind. So yeah, I guess any sort of mindfulness would be great for him.
That ship sailed for JR, right?
Honestly, if I hadn't already spoiled the mindfulness and JR Smith joke at the very beginning of this podcast, I would have said JR as my joke answer for the mindfulness,
But
in all seriousness, I don't know if any of them are particularly mindful.
I think Phil's going to have a hard time. It's going to be like a Harvard grad walking into Arizona State or something.
I guess so. Yeah, exactly. No offense to our Arizona State listeners. You're already insulting entire colleges.
All right. So the first few so we're going to cover on this podcast two or three players every week, particularly the players that we thought had a good week leading up to the podcast. And I think the headliners this season in terms of developing players, Andre Drummond, Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine. I think those are kind of the headliners. If you're not considering Anthony Davis, who I already consider like a top 7 or 8 NBA player anyway, so I wouldn't even like... I mean, he's still developing, but you know what I mean. So, what Drummond, Wiggins, and Wiggins particularly have in common here is that they haven't even reached anything close to their peak, and they're already at the center of their respective team's schemes, which is a very interesting storyline for us to watch, because they will be able to grow into their primes within a scheme that works best for them, that's basically built for them. Drummond, let's talk about him first. Stan Van Gundy enters. Andre Drummond is there, along with Josh Smith and Greg Monroe. We had that whole Greg Monroe fiasco. Turns out he's there, and Josh Smith are there. After, like, millions of rumors, literally nothing happened. And this team is basically the same as it was last year, but with a new coach.
Yeah. I guess this is going to be kind of the turning point in his career, speaking of Andre Drummond. Is Stan Van coming in, and you can already see that Van Gundy's trying to kind of assemble a roster very similar to what he had with the Magic, you know, where you surround this supremely athletic big guy with as many shooters as possible, and you just space the floor. Signing, you know, because that's all Jody can do is hit threes, and Stan Van said, I'm willing to pay a premium for that, even, like, he overpaid.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this builds. I know it ended poorly with Van Gundy and Dwight Howard, but I don't think there's any debating that those had been his most productive seasons. They've also been his healthiest season, so there's kind of your counter-argument, but that's kind of when Dwight was at the peak of his powers so far in his career. And I think you can see, like, a very similar style team with Andre Drummond. And now the biggest question mark, obviously, is what do you do with the other... There's a logjam of big guys there.
Yeah. And Drummond already said that he wants to step up as a leader, which I think is really important. Considering that he's going into his third year now, it's... Now is kind of the time to not only just, you know, be on the court and do your best, but step up in the locker room and really just become an all-around teammate. And I think that's going to have a lot to do with it. With Stan Van Gundy-led teams, he's going to need, especially on this Pistons team, he's going to need somebody to step up. And I think Drummond should be like, if he's going to be the focal point of the offense, he should also be the voice of the team. And I really don't think that that's an understated thing. So in terms of just his on-court performance, also his development as a personality and a leader in the locker room, I think is something else to watch this season.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's very much still a young guy, sort of. He's kind of got that youthful personality.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of playful.
Kind of like Dwight Howard.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-oh.
He's got a lot of parallels, actually. I don't think Van Gundy picked this team by accident. You know, I think he could have coached a number of teams, and this is the opportunity where he probably feels most comfortable, and he can build a team similar to what he had. If he develops a back to the basket game like he's trying to, he's going to be like the premier center at some point. Just because, one, there's not a whole lot of competition, but two, there's no combination of that right now, of a back to the basket game while maintaining this attacking the rim kind of athletic profile that he has. He can, like, if he does get a post up game, then he can play full court, he can play half court, he can play at any speed, and he'll be kind of that cornerstone for the Pistons, like they already planned for him to be for the next decade, really.
So last year he basically just dunked the ball. This year, we've already seen some hook shots and jump hooks from him, especially in that Wizards game. I was just watching some highlights. And he's got that hook. I mean, some of them were a little fluky, bounced around the rim and went in. But if he can get that going consistently, That's going to be something we need to watch for him as the season goes along, is that back to the basket game, if he can get a little jump hook, something that, with his athleticism and size, if he gets that jump hook down, that's indefensible. That's just something that he can go to every night. And that would be, I think, huge for him. What are you looking for from him this season in terms of something specific where he needs to improve? Or you think he will improve?
Other than that kind of that back-to-the-basket game, we need to see just kind of more of a consistency night in, night out in terms of a shooting percentage. There was some times last year where he would... his rebounding is what really made him valuable last year, not necessarily his offensive output. You'd see him shoot, I mean, obviously not necessarily 9 for 9 like he did last night with the Wizards game, but really like, I mean, he'd shoot like 8 for 10, and then he'd go out the next night and he's like 5 for 14 or something. You kind of need to find that middle ground where you're given a dependable performance on the offensive end night in, night out. So just kind of that stability, that accountability from a scoring perspective would be nice, or at least from a field goal perspective, that they can count on him. Because right now that's not really what he's going out there to do, right? Like you're not expecting him to be your scoring guy. If he has a hot night, that's a bonus for them at the moment. It's the one thing that's most dependable from him right now is that he can get 15 rebounds a night. But if he can add that 12 to 13 points consistently, I think that's really where he takes the next step.
Yeah, I'll take that to the next level, is being consistent on a per play basis. Because there's some plays, even on the defensive end, where, you know, maybe there's some plays where he could be dominant and some plays where he could be very passive on defense and on offense. And if he can just be consistently a threat on both sides of the court, like Dwight Howard was. He was just always a threat to either block a shot or a threat to get a put back dunk if, you know, Hedo Turkoglu didn't make his shot. It was just, you always had to account for him and know where he was on the floor, and that helps everybody around him. And if he can get that down, and now we're really talking, like, maybe not this year, but in the next couple of years, where he can be just a stagnant force all the time, then I think that's kind of where we're looking on what his peak can kind of be. If you're Stan Van Gundy, how do you help Andre Drummond get to that? Because there's obviously like a focus there on Drummond. He keeps switching out the lineups. He starts Monroe. He starts Smith this preseason. Drummond is always the center. There's clearly a focus on Drummond. He's said as much. If you're Van Gundy, how do you make sure that basically those other guys don't get in Drummond's way like they kind of did last year?
That's probably the number one problem that you have most of me is to build a team around him and just kind of find the right way to play, even not even the players, but just how are they going to play? We don't know. They changed that up so often last year, hence why they have a new coach and a GM, and both the same guy. I think you got to create with an athletic profile like that. He's hard to find in the NBA nowadays, and you got to create as much space as possible for him to operate, because he's still vests with a little bit of a head of a steam, you know, going towards the rim, coming off pick and rolls. And I think that's kind of why we've seen this tension with Greg Monroe signing the qualifying offer. It's probably a 90% chance he's gone after this year. A lot of players don't sign their qualifying offer and then become unrestricted free agents and sign with that team again. Even though he is a serviceable player, if not above average, his game doesn't complement Andre's as much, because he kind of takes that high post and it allows for a defender to lag off him and kind of clog the lane, which kind of nullifies Andre's game. Because as much as Greg Monroe is a decent elbow shooter, he's still not a guy who can stretch the floor necessarily for another big guy. He really needs, his game is predicated on offense, and it just it doesn't mix that well with Andre's game. Like, I know we keep going back to the Magic, but I think it's just kind of obvious that that's what Stan Van's going towards. There was nobody in Orlando that had the same game like Greg Monroe. Sorry, you know, they always had that stretch four or someone that could at least be a threat out there, whether they shot a lot or not. Someone who could stand in the corner and do something with it. That's why I think you gotta believe that there's some moves coming this year.
Yeah, I think that even though we had the rumors of trading Josh Smith and Greg Monroe, maybe Van Gundy wasn't so aggressive because he didn't know which one he wanted. I mean, you assume he probably keeps one of them. It's going to be tough to move both of those guys. You're moving an expiring contract with Greg Monroe, so unless the team that receives him knows that he's going to resign, that's a tough trade. Josh Smith is like a Rudy Gay type thing. You just got to find the right team willing to take the right chance and put together the right package for him. And that's also not an easy contract to move. So if you're moving Josh Smith or Greg Monroe, I think the player that you're looking for is either a Ryan Anderson or a David West type player. Either somebody that, in a Ryan Anderson, who could just stretch the floor and hit a few corner threes and just be a threat to give Drummond space, or David West, who might be like the ultimate power forward of playing off players and setting up other good players. I think he's really, really good at that. He can hit that, like, that mid-range shot on the high block, so he provides a little bit of space, and you always have to, you know, respect that if you're a defense. But he can also find, you know, David West will find Roy Hibbert down low and get him in position to score. A guy developing like Roy Hibbert, who needs some help on offense, even Drummond at this point does need some help on offense, I think, somebody like that. There's not a lot of David Wests, I don't think, in the NBA, but a Ryan Anderson type, and there's not a lot of true stretch fours either. That's kind of like the perfect fit. Or, if you can't find one of those guys, you go kind of like what the Miami Heat did and just find a swing man and just put him on power forward and see what happens. Or, you know, a Hedo Turkoglu type or a Shane Battier type.
Exactly. I think if one of them gets traded, it's probably Greg Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he's more attractive piece. And I actually think Josh Smith might... He's not a better player than Greg Monroe. I don't think either of us believe that. But he might be a better fit at the moment, where you can kind of swallow it, and because we know he's not very efficient three-point shooter, but he sure likes to shoot that three, you know. So,
right.
Someone who can space the floor is certainly who they're looking for. Even like somewhere between even a Ryan Anderson to a Patrick Peterson.
Okay.
Patrick Patterson, sorry.
Patrick not Patterson,
cornerback for the Cardinals. Patrick P-Pat for.
That'd be a heck of a get, though. Patrick Peterson from the Cardinals.
Yeah. you know, just a stretch four, because I think that's what really helped the Raptors last year, was just someone who could space the floor to help their guards penetrate. I think that's kind of the name of today's game, is a four out one in style a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So you don't see a whole lot of two big men kind of occupying the same space kind of situation going on. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I think they got to be looking for shooters, because they're still. Even with those moves, they're not necessarily like they're not overflowing with shooters right now,
and they kind of need to be.
Yeah,
and it's a shame you can't trade Josh Smith and Greg Monroe to one team, because they butchered that so badly last year that every team in the NBA knows that those two can't play together.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so. But Josh Smith's contract is like such an albatross where you can't. I mean, no one wants to touch it. I don't think even the most hopeful teams will even look for a trade for Josh Smith. I think he's almost like a persona non grata kind of thing, where he's just not even an option for a lot of teams. So, it'll be interesting, but I think that's the movement that they got to go to, is kind of spread it out. We'll see how Caldwell Pope develops.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Jody can obviously shoot the ball really well. That's what he does. So that's a step in the right direction. But, like, Brandon Jennings, that's, what are you going to do with him? too. He's not a long-term piece there. It'll be interesting to see.
No, unless him and Drummond get some awesome pick-and-roll stuff going.
Yeah.
That's really the only way he stays long-term.
Yeah, I don't really see... Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's kind of what he helps Andre with the best is it's kind of the pick-and-roll. Other than that, who knows? They don't even... The thing is, with this kind of offense, you don't need the point guard to be the focal point of your offense.
Right. Right. I mean, you think about, like, Jameer Nelson.
Yeah.
Was just good for, like, a hot game every here and there. Yeah. You know, finding the right shooter that was open at the time, swinging the ball around, just initiating things. And he threw really good passes to Jameer Nelson. Jameer Nelson threw really good passes to Dwight Howard into the post, which is an underrated skill for a point guard, is timing those post passes right to where that they're in the, you know, premium position to make one, maybe two moves and then and have a chance at a shot. And I think Nelson was good at setting up Dwight, and I think that's all really Brandon Jennings needs to do. And now you're asking Brandon Jennings to say, okay, only do this, which could be a struggle all within itself.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be, I think DJ Augustine will probably get a lot more playing time than you'd think. Kind of like the Bulls last year. Like he was obviously terrible a couple of years ago with the Pacers in the playoffs, like just horrendous. But when you give him less responsibility as a point guard and just have him be a guy who plays off the ball and hits open shots, DJ Augustine's like an okay play. He can be a player on a successful team, which is what the Pistons needed. I think he's going to get a lot more looks at point guard than his name recognition would make you think at this point. So it should be interesting. But Andre Drummond might be like if Anthony Davis is the next, you know, as the next MVP kind of guy, Andre Drummond's like a year or two behind that. Like he's got that kind of ceiling, really. And he's already kind of showing that he can develop and do things. He's never been a guy, even at UConn, he was never a guy who was necessarily slow to learn anything, per se. Like, he just kind of got a slow, like, the way he grew up, he just kind of got a slow start in basketball in general, and kind of had to wait to fill out his body. He was always awkward, always wanted to be a point guard or a guard when he was, you know, going through middle school and high school, and then he kind of just shot up and his body had to fill up, and so he was a little awkward. You could tell the pieces were there at UConn, but he was a project. But he's always kind of had this weird ability to pick up the things that he's needed to learn in order to develop his game, I think, as he's progressed along. And this is the kind of thing where whenever you see someone draft a center who's just a total project, and a lot of times casual fans are like, well, that's not going to help us for a while, and like a lot of these guys don't pan out. Well, you do that just for the off chance that this person becomes an Andre Drummond like talent, because now he's the guy on their team.
Yeah.
And he could be in the future a dominant force for them.
Yeah. I see him and like Boogie Cousins kind of right there. I think Boogie Cousins just has more numbers to back his game up right now, but they're kind of just, and DeMar and Cousins is probably a little bit, you know, more along his arc than Drummond is right now, but I kind of see them as one and the same in terms of they still need to add a lot to the game, and they have. And you're right, Drummond was considered a project when he was drafted. And I do want to talk about Greg Monroe a little bit, because we're still talking about a guy who's still developing in his own right. Monroe's been involved in a lot of trade rumors, as I said before. He was there before Drummond got there, and then they decided to just draft Drummond because, again, you're like what you're saying, you kind of just take a shot at that guy when he's there and where they were picking. So Drummond comes in. They have Drummond, Monroe. They were thinking maybe like a Twin Towers type thing. It's not really working. So for some reason, they went out and got Josh Smith after that. And now Monroe seems like he's going to be on the move. But Monroe can do a few things pretty well on offense. And I think he could be very, very, you know, on the right team, be a really good piece for somebody.
The combination between those two, Monroe and Drummond, is that it's not necessarily that they're not, it's not that they're bad together, it's that Monroe, when guy like Andre Drummond, Monroe is replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
And that he...
And you're not going to look to...
Base symbol.
You're not going to look to spend the money on Monroe when it could be used better elsewhere.
For Drummond. Yeah. The numbers with both him on and off the court are very similar. Both in the team concept, in terms of points per game, in terms of defense, all that, and individually, the way Andre plays. So he's a talent asset that somebody could use in the league, and you wanna flip him for somebody who's gonna make you better than a replacement level, a replacement level shooting guard or wingman, or you know, a power forward that maybe isn't as skilled as Greg Monroe traditionally, but helps the team out in the team concept. That's why you see, like, these are two good players, but you got to trade one because together they're not adding anything. It's not really addition. It's 2 + 2 = it's still 2, you know. It's so
and
I
the
think that's kind of the thought process.
The Pistons are in a good situation with Monroe because, first of all, they can, a lot of times with guys that were picked in the lottery that are on an expiring contract, you're trading them for 50 cents on the dollar usually, just to make sure you get something back in return, because like you said, that guy's probably walking in free agency. This is a situation where Monroe is just simply not he is on an expiring deal, and he probably will walk in free agency, but he just isn't a great fit with Drummond. There's not really like anything, like he's not asking for a trade, he's not a problem in the locker room, he's just not if you're gonna pick Drummond to build your focus around, then you move Monroe. There's an opportunity to get a dollar for a dollar because there's teams that really do need power forwards with the skill set that Monroe has that might have shooters, and that's why there's been so many rumors, just because a trade makes so much sense. And I do think that it's got to happen at some point. And so what? Maybe they're stuck with Josh Smith and they're playing Smith off the bench. There's an opportunity where Smith can just eat up second units, I think, in the perfect world. And if anybody's going to convince Josh Smith to come off the bench and just eat up second units, it's probably Stan Van Gundy that can do that. So, namely because he probably just won't care if Josh Smith is pissed about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're faced with a couple realities. One, they probably have to eat this Josh Smith contract in some way.
Yeah.
And two, it would be... You want to get a trade for Monroe done, but if you just lose him to free agency, it's not necessarily the end of the world for you. Like, it's obviously not ideal, but what they're really trying to do is add shooters, and you can find a way to add shooters even if you're not trading a piece for them. You can find shooters in free agency. You can find shooters in the draft or anything like that, which is kind of the beauty of this system. Like, Stan Van Gundy's Orlando Magic teams didn't have a plethora of all NBA talent at all, if you look at that roster. Like,
right.
It was Dwight Howard, and then Rashard Lewis passed his prime, and Hedo right at the end of his time, Hedo Turkoglu at the end of his time, prime, and then afterwards, like, nowhere near their physical peaks, and everyone else was just a shooter.
Right.
But they were still a competitor in the East. If you have that uber athletic talented big man, you can compete easily in the NBA, which is kind of the benefit, which is kind of the beauty of where the Pistons are at. Sure, they're a long way off when you look at it from contenders, but it's not like they need to find another huge star per se. They need to find people who can work around Drummond.
Right, exactly. And that's another good point, because now they're in a position where they could flip Monroe for 2 or 3 role players, maybe.
Yeah.
So, okay. Let's talk about Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine. This should be pretty fun. So they put on a little bit of a show already this preseason with some alley-oops and some dunks, and that's... Minnesota is lob state now? Is that what's happening?
I guess so.
They kind of know that they're not going to be good this year. I kind of feel like they're just going to say, screw it, let's just dunk a bunch of times. Let's just create a bunch. Let's get on SportsCenter top 10 more than we got with Kevin Love, and that way people might think that we're good.
Yeah, and I think I get the feeling, let me know if you agree or not, that they're just going to play Andrew Wiggins, and they're going to try to put him in the bet. They're building the team around Andrew Wiggins. They're just going bunch of minutes. He's going to look good. He's going to look bad. But he's going to develop and he's going to work through the kinks in his game on the fly. They're not going to try to protect him from anybody. That's how it feels like, the way they talk about him, the way they're using him in preseason. It just seems like they're like, all right, here we go. You're our guy. We're going to try to find ways to use you. It's going to be tough for a little bit, but we're not trying to win right away. You agree with that?
Yeah, exactly. I think Wiggins is very raw. And if you looked at him at Kansas, that was quite obvious that there were nights where he was just a non-factor scoring the ball. And then there was nights where he was absolutely a threat to do anything with the ball. And I think developing that consistency and just kind of knowing what his... I still don't even think he knows where his sweet spot is on the floor, where it is that he will play best on the floor, because he was used so much on the perimeter in Kansas, where I think maybe he might be best used just moving all around the court, trying to find an open space, just a crease to try to get to the basket, cutting, doing things like that. I'm not sure he's necessarily... I think he needs somebody to set him up. And the Wolves don't necessarily have that. I mean, they have Rubio. So hopefully that Rubio and Wiggins thing will play out really well. But he's not... He doesn't really have that other dominant scorer on the team that I think would be really, really useful for him. Like, if he were in Cleveland and he with LeBron James, or even if LeBron didn't sign there and he was just with Kyrie Irving, that still would have been, like, probably one of the better pairings for him coming into the league. But asking him to maybe be the focal point of the offense isn't, I think, a smart thing, because I just haven't seen it from him. But I don't think that's the same as saying that's gonna be, he's gonna be the focal point of your team, because he could be such a balanced and dominant two-way player, even if he's not necessarily the ultimate shot creator.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, I totally get it, and I think there's a couple ways of thinking about it. See, I have more than gut feeling that they're gonna make him the focal point, and I believe their thinking is that offense at Kansas didn't maximize his talents.
Right.
Well, Self runs a system that doesn't necessarily help with your individual statistics. It's been that way since he was at Illinois. And I think that's kind of the prevailing thought. That's the feeling I get, is the prevailing thought is they didn't have an offense tailored around him. And sure, he has a lot of growing to do, both physically and in his game, especially on offense. But they're going to try to find out as soon as possible what's going to be his bread and butter. And they don't want to have that. They don't want to have that, like, okay, well, now we're going to start tailoring it around him. I think they just want to, right from the get-go, just say, all right, let's see what you're made of. And maybe they scale back a little bit at some point if he's really starting to struggle or not. But I get this gut feeling that they're just going to, you know, put him out there and just say, let's see what you can do. Because they're clearly not trying. I just don't know, like, Wes, who else would be the focal point of that offense?
Right, you can't, it's not Rubio. As much as maybe they wanted it to be Rubio, he's not going to be able to be the focal point. But he's good because he can put the ball in places that might, you know, get Wiggins in position. If Wiggins just get cut, Wiggins and LaVine, if both of them just get cutting to the basket and find creases, Rubio will find them. I think that's going to be really useful. But yeah, you're right. Nobody else. You're Thaddeus Young.
Yeah, maybe.
Right.
They're going to try to run some off-ball screens for Wiggins, uh-huh. And then maybe get another quick rescreen and get him in some space, and then he has to either make a decision. Do I kick out to the open guy, or do I attack the hoop, or what can I do here with the ball in my hands, and I'm heading towards the hoop. I think that's what they're going to do a lot. You're going to see him move off-ball a ton, like you said. A whole bunch of off-ball screens, and look to get him the ball while he's moving and his defender's trailing him. What do you think we're going to see from him, both positive and negative, in this first year?
I think the main thing with Wiggins is going to be not getting down on himself. Maybe if he goes 1-for-7, which is very, very possibly could happen. on any given night. I think that's going to be the main thing, is just you have 82 games now. Not all of them are going to be very good, especially on a Timberwolves team that doesn't have much talent at all. Half of those are probably not going to be great games for you. And he needs to be in that mindset that he's not trying to get, like, he is on an NBA roster. He's made it to the league. Now it's about developing his skills in a way that maybe, again, he didn't get to do it with Bill Self. He really didn't get to, and I think the Timberwolves right now are, they're going to allow him to just figure it out. Like you said, just let's figure out what you're good at, because nobody really knows what you're good at, because you sure as hell didn't find out in high school or at Kansas. So, what I'm scared of with Wiggins is exactly that, is you don't want him to get down on himself. You don't want him to basically start feeling like he wasn't worth the draft pick, or that he can't shoulder the load, and if all the losing is going to really weigh on him because he's been very successful. So all the losing that's bound to happen in Minnesota, that could be tough. It's that mental stuff, because the guy is so, like, stupid talented that it's, I think, that other side of the coin, it's that mental stuff that happens after the game and getting back onto a practice court or back into the film room, knowing that your team got trampled by 25 and you got to go out and play another game in 2 nights kind of thing. So that to me is the biggest issue with Wiggins, and something I'm interested in seeing.
I think that he's going to look pretty good at some times. I think there's going to be moments where his shot's falling and then all of a sudden he can get to the hoop. And then even if he's not finishing, he's got like one of the best second leaps we've ever seen, you know, where he goes up and then he can just hardly gather himself and go get the rebound and put it back in. I think you're going to see a lot of those nights where you're like, wow, I can really see the future. And then there's going to be a lot of rough games where his shot isn't falling, or just, you know, he's got someone guarding him that's draped all over him and he doesn't quite feel like he's getting separation. And he's got to realize what's open in the NBA compared to what was open you're not going to get a whole bunch of space in the NBA night in, night out. And so he's gonna have to work on dribbling. Now, like, I know that sounds basic, yeah. Dribbles, it's so high. Like, there's gonna be a lot of turnovers coming off screens where he's trying to drive into the lane. There's gonna be a lot of times where he gets a travel or a double dribble because he gets walled off and he doesn't know where to pass it out on the perimeter. There's gonna be a lot of those times where it just kind of looks bad. But there's also gonna be those up moments where he's got to step on somebody defensively who's guarding him on the defensive side, and he just takes advantage of that person, and maybe they're a little short or anything like that, and he's just getting his shot off, and he's hitting it. So I think he's going to look good and bad, like you said. A lot of times it's going to look tough, though. One thing that is a positive with him, I think defensively he's going to be very good from the start, and that can help a lot. And if they can generate some turnovers, that's really where he's going to look good in the transition, just where he can be explosive. And they'll be nice like that, too. It's going to be a lot like Victor Oladipo. You know, he had his ups, but he had a lot of downs, too, where he looked kind of uncomfortable last year. I think it's kind of the similar way, where they're both very athletic people in different ways, but they have to find a way to translate their athleticism to the NBA level, which I think it was both. It was apparent for both guys going into the rookie year that there was going to be that issue.
Yeah, and I think Zach LaVine, same thing. It's going to be, I mean, he's not going to get the playing time that Wiggins gets, but it's going to be similar, where he's going to need to get out and transition, give him the ball, kind of see what he can do with it, and, you know, get comfortable with some pick and rolls, and just try to get somebody walled off and find just a little bit of a crease to get to the rim. And there's going to be some off-ball stuff for him, too, even though he's a guard.
I think he's got to be off-ball.
Yeah, absolutely, even though he likes to handle the ball. But
Sorry, I'm cutting you off. I'm not excited about Zach LaVine.
No, go for it.
He's actually a good shooter.
Yeah.
He shot 37.5% last year from three. It looks goofy. Like, he's got his shooting elbow out. It's almost like winged out when he shoots it. I'm doing a demonstration that only Wes can see, guys, but
It's not Michael Kidd Gilchrist bad, though.
No, it's not. It's not bad. It just looks kind of.
It looks funny.
But he's an effective shooter. When you just leave him out there, and almost to his detriment sometimes, because he'll take. He doesn't know that time and score situation a lot of times, where he'll take some really bad contested long twos or threes early in the shot clock.
And the problem with those weird-looking shots a lot of time is that they are coupled with a slow release. Which isn't so much an issue in college basketball, but becomes a major issue real quick in the NBA. If you have a slow release, all of a sudden, a good three-point shooter is just a guy that passes the ball away on the court in the NBA. And I'm worried about that with LaVine.
I mean, a lot of his issues are going to be just similar to Andrew Wiggins on a different scale. First of all, there's a log jam in Minnesota with guards. I mean, Corey Brewer, Shabazz Muhammad.
Is Kevin Martin still there?
Kevin Martin is still there, yes. Wait, let me check.
I feel like he might have got traded again.
No, he's still there.
Okay, that's what I thought.
So, that's right, because he had that quote where he's like, I honestly didn't know Kevin Love got traded until, like, this was in September. He's like, I honestly didn't, and no one knew if he was joking or not, because he said it so deadpan, straight-faced. But, yeah, there's a logjam there, and he's not going to play a lot. How's he gonna be mentally with not playing a whole bunch? I don't know. You know, it'll be interesting. With him, he's very similar to Andrew Wiggins. I don't even know if that's a great thing, but it's something they have now.
Yeah, and he kind of has like that backup quarterback thing going for him, where he's gonna see action against like second and third guys, like second and third unit guys, maybe at the end of games, and he's just gonna be able to just be way more athletic than basically anybody else on the court, and just find ways to do like fun things that can get the fans like really pumped up. And could get it, and he kind of already has a cult following, but kind of pick up a cult following among Minnesota Timberwolves fans in that way, and be like, oh, why didn't we see that from Wiggins tonight? Like, LaVine just dunked twice in the final 5 minutes of garbage time. Like, why didn't Wiggins dunk in the first quarter? It kind of thing. That could be something that happens this season.
He's also got to just physically mature.
Yeah.
Both guys look so wiry on the court. It's almost like it's kind of concerning how skinny they look.
Yeah.
And especially with LaVine, he just defensively he gets bullied sometimes. So if there's a guard who isn't afraid to go down to the post, like they're just gonna back him in. He's got to get a little bigger. He's super young. He's 19. So he is gonna get bigger. He's gonna get stronger. But unlike Wiggins and his wiriness, LaVine defensively, he's a liability right now, which is a lot of the reason why you're not going to see him play a whole bunch of minutes. Like, you know, he might get 10, 12 minutes a game, but other than that, I think he's going to get off to a slow start and be one of those guys at the end of the year where you see him more and more, and you say, he'll be a guy that we're excited about a year from now, maybe having some sort of breakout season. But he's kind of like Andre Drummond in a guard package, you know? In college, the physical tools, you saw it, but he wasn't the finished product in college, and he wasn't the guy who necessarily totally leaped off the page at you. But the freak athleticism's there, and the potential's there, and teams like him because they can mold him into whatever they need him to be. It looks like athletically he can do anything if you challenge him. He can be just a 3-and-D guy if
I was gonna say, yeah.
Or he could be an athletic freak and maybe a guy who you know is a scorer.
Do you think that the idea that Minnesota had for him changed when they got Wiggins? Because they drafted LaVine with Kevin Love.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
My feeling is you don't avoid picking up Andrew Wiggins because you have Zach LaVine.
Right.
I tr- think there's a question too whether they drafted LaVine thinking they could keep Love or not. I think I'm in the group that says maybe they were hopeful that they could keep Love at the time, and that Zach LaVine would compliment him well, which he would.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a certain point where you just, you know, you can't. He was gone.
Yeah.
Kevin Love, that is. Like, he was just going to be gone no matter what. And I think at that point, you can't turn down, even though they're very similar skill sets, you can't turn down the prospect of Andrew Wiggins just because you have Zach LaVine. And so maybe they just have a surplus of athleticism and
like, double down on athletic guys.
Yeah, like, sometimes you kind of just have to play with the cards you're dealt, you know, and if that's the way it is, like, that's, you have to double down on that, and you're going to have to be weak somewhere else.
And maybe LaVine does get really good, and he becomes expendable. Because, I mean, to think that Minnesota's got this team where they're just going to build around and make a run at some point is ridiculous. So,
yeah.
Right now, I think they just got a bunch of assets. And you look at what they got at big men, and you got Pekovic and Gorgui Jang, and you got some pieces there, too. And Jang and Pekovic don't really mesh well together either, almost in a way that's like Greg Monroe and Drummond.
Jang showed some future stuff.
Really like him. We're probably, he will have a big week this year, and we'll talk a lot about him, I think.
Yeah, I was unreasonably high on him last year coming out of the draft.
I think I was too.
Because
I would have picked him number one.
Of the way
over Anthony Bennett.
But the way he played in big moments at Louisville,
yeah,
was impressive. You know, that's just kind of when he played his best, was when he was surrounded against good talent, NBA level talent. That's kind of when he played his best. And yeah, he's an older guy, so that he's not like Zach LaVine, where he comes in at 19. Jang was, I can't remember now, 22 or 23 last year. But he's a guy who just looks like he's always had a willingness to also improve his game, develop post moves, just be a crazy incessant rebounder. So, I mean, they have pieces there, but you're right. The puzzle is so incomplete that we have no idea. Maybe they do double down on the athleticism the way the Warriors have doubled down on shooting. I mean, the way the league is, it's a night league. You have to use your strengths and exploit their weaknesses. That's how you win games. And whoever can do that the best comes out with the best record at the end of the year. That's just the way it is. And if your strength's athleticism, you just got to find a way to build on it and cover up your weaknesses. So we'll see. But you're right. He could always be a trade guy down in the future.
So let's finish this podcast up with some news and notes, some things that happened today. Contavious Caldwell-Pope looked like he had a sprain the other day in Detroit's game against the Wizards, but they're saying now it might not be as big of an issue, but there's still no timetable for his return. So we talked about basically the Pistons already and how Pope can help Drummond, how KCP, he's a good shooter, struggled with a shot last season, seemed to be getting it. He was averaging something like 19 points a game in the preseason. He was playing really, really well for them. So that was going to be a big blow, but it looks like that injury wasn't as bad as maybe they initially thought. I mean, he had to get helped off the court and everything. So whenever that kind of thing happens, you worry about it. So it looks like he's going to be back, and that's definitely going to help Drummond and give him some shooters. Durant is trying to decide whether or not he wants to have surgery on that fractured foot. How concerned are you about that foot?
It sounds like a unique injury. It's on the very outside of the foot.
They're saying it's the same one Yao had, Yao Ming.
Yeah, it's not good. If I recall, it's on the fifth metatarsal, so it's like,
okay, you
know, that bone that sticks out on the right side.
Yep, I'm aware of what the fifth metatarsal is. I took a class in college, and for some reason, I think that was the only one I got right on the test, was the fifth metatarsal.
You have supreme mindfulness of the metatarsal area.
Thanks, Phil.
Concerned, obviously.
Yeah.
Whenever you're dealing with feet and people with big feet on top of that,
yeah,
you get a little uneasy. I don't think it's going to be a problem long term, but I'm not saying that there's a non-zero chance that this has lingering effects for him.
Mm-hmm.
The same way Russell Westbrook's knee is always going to be a question mark, you know? How do you feel? Like, I don't think this changes... Hold on. Let me just get this in real quick, because I'm going to pass it to you. I don't think this changes the Thunder's outlook this season. I think he's going to miss a couple months. Maybe their record at the end of the year, but I think by the time playoffs come, they're going to be unaffected. But I'm not sure that this isn't a reoccurring issue later down the road. Now go.
The Thunder need to make sure it's not a reoccurring issue. And that means letting Durant rest as long as he can. If it's a Derrick Rose situation where it's twice as long as you think he needs to rest, let him rest. Let him have the time. In the meantime, we're going to see, and I'm really excited for this. It's a shame it had to happen like this, but
yes.
If Westbrook can be Derrick Rose and lead the team, I am so freaking excited for that. You have no idea, because I've always liked Westbrook more than Derrick Rose. Personally, I think he offers more defensively, but because Derrick Rose is really, really not good defensively, mostly, so Westbrook wins by default. But we're going to have this chance to see if Westbrook could do, like these things, like passing the ball, making his teammates better. But as far as Durant goes... This happened at a bad time because for the Thunder, more so than Durant, because Durant's pending free agency. And I know that it's tough to get, like, to make that leap from this, but the Thunder don't have a huge window here. Where it seemed like 2 years ago when they were in the finals, it seemed like their window was boundless. And then Harden leaves, or Harden gets traded. That kind of closed the window shut. Kendrick Perkins is still there, which he's like kind of sitting on the window, jamming it shut. I just feel like with the Thunder right now, you have 2 years, and where you have Durant, you have Harden, you have Westbrook, and you have Ibaka, and then just a bunch of other role players that for some reason they haven't parlayed into a significant veteran yet. Why they haven't traded like Perry Jones and Reggie Jackson, maybe not Reggie Jackson anymore, but Perry Jones and somebody else for like Kevin Martin they tried Kevin Martin, never mind. So I feel like that window is closing for them, and that this is just, this fifth metatarsal injury is an issue that they didn't need, and now they have to worry about it.
I see us talking about, I can envision us talking about this Russell Westbrook led Thunder team at some point in our podcast.
Yeah.
Just how they play. Like, it's going to be interesting to watch for sure.
Last note. I'm going to try my best to say this.
This is my favorite player in the league. This is the best news of the day.
Oh, by far.
I'm so excited.
To go and talk about this. It's going to any minute now. Giannis Antetokounmpo. 7 out of 10? 7 out of 10 on that?
Yeah. I think it's Antetokounmpo.
I think you're right. I don't know where the stress is. There's like 23 vowels in that name. I have no idea where the stress is on that thing. Sounds like they're playing him at point guard at the next game. How fun is that?
He's going to start at point guard, which is...
Oh, my God.
That's going to be...
You know who's training him to play point guard, right?
Yeah. We'll see.
Gary Payton. Who I saw at an airport recently. I really wanted to sneak that in there. That's why I kind of...
Got it. You saw Gary Payton at an airport.
It's pretty cool.
How's that?
I didn't talk to him, but he was talking to somebody else. It seemed really nice. I thought for sure he would have been the jerk at the airport.
Yeah.
Thought for sure he would have been the jerk. Had no idea he would actually be kind. Sorry, Gary Payton.
You know whose game is kind? Giannis's.
Oh, smooth transition, Ross.
It should be fun to watch. He's not going to be... He's going to be a guy who gets the ball off the floor and starts the offense. He's not going to be a guy who runs the offense necessarily. But no one is for the Bucks. That's not how it's going to work. But it'll be fun to see. Like, a 6'11 point guard, that's some NBA nerdist stuff right there. Like,
Jason Kidd is quickly becoming my favorite coach in the NBA.
Love yourself some Jason Kidd, and I'm starting to love myself some Jason Kidd as well.
He doesn't give a shit.
He just anything but himself.
He goes out of his way to do weird stuff.
Yep.
Giannis a point guard? You won't do it. What's he do? Get drunk and playing poker? And somebody says, you know what Jason won't do?
Play Giannis.
Play Giannis a point guard. Tell me I won't. You won't. Done. Next game. Like, I know it's just preseason, so it's really just like nobody cares. Like, this is the time to experiment. But if Giannis straight up kills it at point guard, if he just runs some like nasty pick and rolls and just goes all out and just something happens with something just clicks between him and like Henson and Sanders, and then they just run like this insanely athletic pick and roll thing, and he's able to kick it out to I'm so excited for this. And for, like, the insane passes that he's going to do. Because he can, with his limbs, he can just, like, pass the ball behind the other guy's back.
Yep.
It's going to be insane.
It's, Draft Express is, like, really infamous for covering their player profiles and just putting together video packages, especially for players coming out of Europe. And you don't know, they get all this weird, grainy European video. He played in, like, the Greek 2 league. Like, he didn't even play in the best Greek league. It just looked like more organized YMCA stuff. But the thing that first stuck out at you is that he had great ball handling skills. Like, that's where he was at his best, was with the ball in his hands, leading the break. And then he was, like, he's probably 6'8 at the time, and now he's 6'11. But he still has that ball handling skill. So it's not like... You can't take your average 6'11 lanky guy and put him at point guard. But with Giannis, he has this unique background that there's a possibility that maybe this works out in some sort of way. And guess what? If they had any super competent point guard in Milwaukee, I don't think Giannis would be the starting point guard per se. But
not a fan of Brandon Knight.
He's not a point guard. He's a shooting guard. He's just an off-the-ball shooter. They tried to make it happen. It's just not going to happen. He's all like Brandon Jennings. Like, they're not real point guards.
Yeah. So, here's my issue with Giannis is, while defensively, he could be dominant. A 6'11 guy just routinely, like, his assignment is the other team's point guard because he's playing point guard. That could be a huge issue for other point guards. Imagining, like, they have to go up against... That's like LeBron James covering, you know, point guards at the end of games. It's just going to happen on a play-by-play from first to fourth quarter. I mean, that's just... It's potentially just dominating and could really just screw up what a team does.
I think that's why you do this.
Yes.
I think that's the benefit. It's just defensively, not offensively.
Absolutely. Because offensively, he's still going to be on offense. You want him to have the ball, throw him the ball. It's, you know, it's that simple. But defensively, this is huge because now you're replacing a 6'1 to 6'3 point guard with a 6'11 guy. You're filling out the vacant small forward spot with a small forward. Now your length is just ridiculous on the team. Just, you know, 5-man average. You're going to be the tallest team in the league.
Yeah.
So my issue with this is, remember when we saw Chris Paul cover Kevin Durant in the playoffs last year, and how that really screwed up Durant for a little bit, because Durant has rather a high dribble and kind of away from the body dribble, and that Chris Paul, because he's shorter to the ground, was able to just, you know, mess with Durant basically with those active hands that he has. If you put a guy like that with active hands on Giannis, where maybe he's lower to the ground, can get to that ball a little bit quicker, that could really screw up Giannis, I think. That's my issue with it.
I think he's going to try to minimize the amount of actually dribbling he's doing. I don't think you're going to see him pound the ball into the ground necessarily. If he's dribbling, I think he's moving forward, and then just distributing the ball and they're getting into their offense. We'll see. It'll be interesting to watch. I'm excited to watch. I'm going to watch all of a preseason Bucks game. So.
I think I'm going to DVR it and watch it multiple times. Maybe watch it in reverse one time.
Jason Kidd strikes again.
I'm so excited. He's my favorite. I can't wait for his next experiment.
Oh, you'll love him.
Larry Sanders at shooting guard.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
It's good. It sounds stupid, but we're going to figure out a way to make it amazing.
Yeah. We're going to talk a lot about the Bucks this year.
Yes.
So buckle up. That'll be
buckle up for the Bucks. All right. Thanks, Ross. We'll be back again next week with another Hardwood Prospectus. Don't know what we're talking about yet, but that's kind of the idea. So whoever has a good week. Maybe we'll talk about... there's a good chance we'll talk about Giannis next week.
Giannis!
A recap on the Antetokounmpo recap.
Get better.
It's a work in progress, just like all these players. We'll close out with that.
Thanks, Wes.
Thanks, Ross.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.